Now, a very good afternoon to you. Welcome to Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. It is March 19th, 2024. I'm Richie Allen, live from Salford City. I've got two very, very good guests for you today. Reach out to me via the website, via the app. I'd love to hear from you today. Thank you. Reach out to me, I said. Yeah, something should be happening now. That's one of those days again, isn't it? It's one of those bloody days.
Uncensored. Unfiltered. You're listening to Richie Allen on the world's most popular independent news radio show.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yeah, you know they say that pride comes before a fall. There I was congratulating myself on having it all ready to go, my ducks in order for 4 o'clock. Wrong fader. How are you, by the way? I hope all is well with you. It's a beautiful spring afternoon here in the northwest of the UK. It's gorgeous. Coming up this hour, David Vance. David is a geopolitical analyst and broadcaster. He's been on with me many times before. Much to talk about with David, Kate Middleton, what the hell's going on there? Joey Barton and Jeremy Vine, what the hell is going on there? And we might also talk about King's Cross and that Islamic verse that was broadcast on the information screen at King Cross train station, which has got a lot of people annoyed today, but much more as well with David. Now, coming up in the second hour, for the first time on this programme, Dr. Tech Kong will be with me. He is the leader of the Alliance for Democracy and Freedom Party, but he is much more than that. He is a former senior police surgeon and forensic physician, a GP, incredibly medically qualified. So much to get into with Dr. Tech Kong. That's in the second hour. And as I've already said, but I'll say it again, I'm sure you will have thoughts to share on the things being discussed. And you should know how to do that now. Reach out to me via the website, download the app from the App Store or Google Play, and say hello to me that way. I'm a poet, but I do know it. Every news website today, BBC News, everyone you can think of, is saying that Gaza's entire population is facing acute food insecurity. Anthony Blinken, is the US Secretary of State. He's saying severe levels of food insecurity and hunger experienced by 2 million people in Gaza. The first time an entire population has been so classified. The BBC put these questions to Blinken. What's going on there? He's called on Israel to prioritise providing for those in need. UN agencies have said North Gaza could face famine by May without a pause in the fighting and a surge in aid, okay? It's an absolutely horrendous situation there. Israeli negotiators were due to begin talks in Qatar today in an attempt to agree a deal with Hamas to stop the fighting, get Israeli hostages out in return for humanitarian aid. Aid agencies, all of them, singing from the same hymn sheet, human rights groups, the United Nations are saying that starvation has already set in. Now, videos have emerged in recent days of emaciated children, videos that evoke memories of Ethiopia in 83 and 84. It's awful. So Times Radio today asked Avi Hyman, a spokesman for Benjamin Netanyahu, to come on and explain it. Just listen to this. Feast your ears, you won't believe it.
Do you accept that assessment, that very stark assessment, that half of Gazans are already starving?
No, absolutely not. Fully reject it. I can tell you that...
Surprise, surprise!
80% more aid, more food, sorry, has been going on into Gaza since the war started than was going into Gaza before the war started. We've heard talk about imminent famine almost from day one of the war. It's simply not true. We're doing our absolute utmost to get aid into Gaza, and Hamas is doing their utmost to steal aid and give it to their people. So
are you saying there's more food going into Gaza than there was before October the 7th?
Really?
Not just more food, 80% more food. We've seen over 17,000 lorries going in, seeing hundreds of tons of food going in. And the problem isn't getting the aid into Gaza. There are no limits on getting aid into Gaza. The problem is ensuring it gets to the right people. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't some people in certain pockets in Gaza that are harder to reach for various logistic reasons. But we're also working on that. We're working with the private sector. We're working with the international community and international organizations to make sure the food gets to the people that need it.
What?
Bullshit.
Bullshit, yeah.
You know, our fight is with Hamas, not the people of Gaza. It is not our interest to inflict any type of suffering on the people of Gaza. Bullshit.
That's me doing that, by the way, not Times Radio, just in case you were wondering how they could allow this. There's no interjection from Stig Abel, the guy asking the question.
There is a war going on. We will do our utmost to get the aid to the people that need it and to destroy Hamas.
So would you say that the vast majority of people in Gaza have enough food to eat?
Absolutely, and we will endeavour to ensure the vast majority.
So when the EU is saying there is a famine, half the country is starving, it's just not true.
Yes, that is what I'm saying.
Bullshit.
Yeah, that was Avi Hyman. That evokes memories of Comical Ali in Iraq in 2003. We'll leave that one there. The situation is dire in Gaza. I don't need to tell you that. And they sat there, the co-presenters, because Stig Abel had a woman sitting alongside him, and they allowed a genocidal propagandist take a big wet shit all over their programme. No pride, none. I'd rather be fired for taking him on than hang on to my job for sitting there and saying nothing. Going to get into this briefly with David Vance in a few minutes. This next story. What's going on with this royal nonsense and Kate Middleton, the Princess of Wales? The Sun published a video today taken by a bloke who saw them, that's William and Kate, the Prince and Princess of Wales, at a farm shop recently. It hasn't satisfied the internet, though, at all. Let's hear from BBC Royal Correspondent Simon Jones.
Well, take a look at this. This is the front page of this morning's Sun newspaper. It headlines, Royal World Exclusive First Picture. And then it says, great to see you again, Kate. Now, this picture, the Sun says, was taken from a video that was filmed by someone who was visiting the farm shop behind me on Saturday. Now, the paper has spoken to the man who took the footage. Now, he says he was doing a bit of shopping himself, searching for some steak, when he looked over towards the bread aisle. And then he said he saw a woman who, when she turned round, looked rather familiar. He couldn't quite place her. And then he said when he saw the man, he thought, is that the royal couple? And he said after leaving the farm shop, he went to his car and decided to film the couple as they left. Now, it's possible that in the past, The Sun and other newspapers would not have published an image like this because the couple were on a private trip here. It wasn't any sort of official royal engagement.
Yes, the papers have agreed over the years not to annoy them when they're on private business, but...
But the newspaper says it decided to publish the image and also to release the video because it says it wants to end what it calls the madness of recent social media speculation. Now, ever since it was announced that Kate had gone into hospital to have abdominal surgery, there has been a huge amount of speculation and conjecture online about what exactly she was suffering from, how her recovery was going. And that speculation reached fever pitch when on Mothering Sunday, Kensington Palace released a picture of Catherine surrounded by her three children. But from the word go, people looking at it thought, that picture looks a bit odd, something doesn't seem quite right about it. And the following day, Catherine apologised, saying she had edited the image like many other amateur photographers, and she said sorry for any confusion. So I think Kensington Palace will be hoping that this picture in the newspaper today might help dampen down some of the more fevered speculation, but certainly looking at social media this morning, the conspiracy theorists are still very much out in force.
Yeah, I've been kind of amazed at how many listeners to this programme have become engaged in this story. Is it the real Kate? Isn't it? What happened to the real Kate? Surprise, but I'm not judging you. It might be interesting for a number of reasons. We'll ask David Vance for his thoughts on it because David has been tweeting about it. DavidVance.net. You'll find David on Twitter as well. A little bit later on, Dr. Tech Kong will be on the programme. What an interesting man. And we'll have some interesting things to discuss, I think. We're certainly going to talk about LBC Radio publishing stories today about Died Suddenly. So we might get into that with Dr. Tech Kong and other issues as well with him. It's now 10 minutes past the hour of 4 o'clock, Tuesday's Richie Allen radio show. Let's leave the royal family. You can always count on Kay Burley at Sky News to opt for the quirkier stories, but stories that are important nonetheless. Like this one, robots for the elderly, robots for companionship for the elderly. Have a listen.
Could having a robot companion combat loneliness? Scientists are developing what they describe as empathetic machines that could be especially helpful to elderly people in the early stages of dementia. The work is being done by the National Robotarium. And Stuart Miller is its chief executive. Do I pronounce that correctly, Stuart?
Yes, you did, Kay. Yeah.
Excellent. Tell me about robots that can keep older people, more experienced people, company.
Company. Robots. What happened to puppies or kittens? What happened to their relatives keeping them company? This is Stuart from the Robotarium. I never knew such a place existed. He's the chief executive.
Well, I think we all know that there's a need with an aging population and a growing number of people, not just with dementia, but also with other frailties that mean that they stay at home most of the time to make sure that they have the support that they need. And at the moment, that's primarily delivered by people visiting and spending a small amount of time with them. With robotics, you've got the opportunity to give people a companion 24/7. In situations where they're not able to, for example, have a cat or a dog and look after a cat or dog properly, then giving them some form of robotic companion replaces that emotional companion and that friend in the home that they otherwise wouldn't have.
Right. Okay. Kay?
Would a human not work better?
Great question, Kay. This is why Kay's on the big bucks. Wouldn't be better if an actual human being sat with the senior citizen to keep them company?
Yes, almost certainly.
Brilliant answer, yes, is the answer there.
But I think if the choice is between no human and a robotic companion, then a robotic companion is better than no human at all.
But why does it have to be either or? Anyway, more on this.
And I think for a lot of people, they spend an awful lot of time in isolation, either because of mental or physical frailty. Making sure that they have some kind of companionship.
And a robot is the answer, right? So they have mental frailty. Somebody in their later years, in their autumn years, they might have dementia, they might have Alzheimer's, they might be going senile. And the answer is a robot, is it?
Can only be good for their mental health.
What?
And probably takes the burden off the health services as well.
It's a sprawling £22 million facility, I believe, that you work from. What else are you working on?
Jesus, Kay. Your follow-up question was, this is madness, isn't it? Sending robots into care homes to keep the company of very senior people who are not well, who might not recognise their own family members. Are you serious? Kay's like, no, what else are you doing?
We're working on a number of different areas, everything from agriculture to manufacturing, space, healthcare, social care. We're working on offshore energy. We're working on nuclear energy. Robotics is pretty ubiquitous now.
Wait till you hear what he says next.
Being explored by many sectors of our economy as a tool to help achieve the kind of things that we want to achieve, whether that's replacement or augmenting the workforce and making sure that we've got people where there's labour shortages.
What was that about replacing the workforce there, Stuart? And why did you pause and catch yourself?
As a tool to help achieve the kind of things that we want to achieve, whether that's replacement or augmenting the workforce and making sure that we've got people where there's labour shortages.
Replacing or augmenting the workforce.
Something that particularly appeals to me, Stuart, is that you're...
Wait, again, this is why Kate paid the big bucks.
Working on a dog-like machine that's the size of a Labrador.
Brilliant.
Yes, they're becoming very common now. So there are many manufacturers around the world now that have four-legged robotics. It's better balanced than two legs, but it's able to go into areas that tracks and wheels and other kinds of locomotion can't.
Are they going to be better behaved than my setters?
The answer, unsurprisingly, was yes, the robot dogs will be better behaved than your setters, Kay. Of course, the applications, if you think about it, today, I don't know if I've got time to play the clips, I hope I don't, because I'm tired of hearing about it, but today there were a number of alarms issued by various climate scientists about ice melting and about the need to expedite whatever measures, you know, we will accept in order to prevent climate change from from collapsing the planet in 20 or 30 years' time. But that's an application, isn't it? People, you can't have pets anymore because we need to reduce our carbon footprint. But luckily enough, the Robotarium, you can just swing by after work and pick up a four-legged puppy that doesn't shit or piss on the floor. You don't have to take it out for a walk. Fantastic. Sounds like the plan to me. It's positively evil, isn't it? This world we live in, where you would even think about putting a robot into the room of somebody who's lived his or her entire life, raising their families, doing mostly good. You know, they've paid into the system. They've paid all their national insurance and their income taxes and their council taxes. They've never stopped paying, really, for 50 years. And the best you can do for them, when they need you the most, to say, well, we've got a robot for you. It's going to sit here and keep you company instead of a real human being. I mean, I'm not hamming this up. It's disgusting to me, this. It really is. You know how we talked on this programme over the years about something very important? You know how we talked about guilt by association or killing something? When I say killing, I don't mean physically killing something. But cancelling something through I don't know how to even say this because I haven't thought about it. We've seen, haven't we, over the years, on this programme in particular, certain people will have said, I can't come on with you because of who you've interviewed over the years or because of the reputation your programme might have. And I've said to some of these people over the years, I've said, well, why don't you make it clear when you come on that you don't particularly like me or the programme, but you're taking the opportunity to come on and speak to an audience who you might not ordinarily get to speak to put these points of view out there and then to go back to doing whatever you were doing after the programme. So I've said this to people, you don't have to like me, you don't have to like the guests that I've interviewed in the past, but the programme is a very wide reach, why not come on and take me on? People have said, no, I'm not going to give you any credibility by coming on. And last night I was lucky enough, I was watching Sky News. They were talking about GB News, which has been found in violation 5 times by Ofcom, the broadcast regulator, the media regulator. They've been in breach of impartiality guidelines and rules and regulations. This is because they've got politicians, MPs presenting news programmes at times, which is farcical. Anyway, on Sky News last night, Sean Berry was on with Liam Fox. Liam Fox is an old Tory. He's a backbencher these days. He's formerly had ministerial roles. Sean Berry is representing the Green Party. She might be one of the co-leaders of the Green Party. I have no idea. But this came up, GB News, and whether Sean Berry would speak to GB News. And the answer is very telling and very important.
Welcome back. Now, before the break, we heard from Stuart Purvis on the Ofcom ruling on GB News. Well, let's bring in my guests, Sean Berry and Liam Fox. Sean, you first. Do you ever watch GB News or have you been on it?
Not if I can avoid it. And I've never knowingly been on GB News. They may have reported some stuff that recorded me, but no, I've never accepted an invitation. And I never accepted invitations from Russia Today, and I never accepted invitations from Islam TV either, because I don't really believe that any channel ought to be as biased as that, as serving a vested interest.
Why don't you go on and tell them that then when they invite you on? When they invite you on, why don't you go on and tell them that? Speak to the presenters. Tell them, think you're terribly biased. I only came on here because, you know, you don't have any balance. You don't seek any balance when it comes to climate change. So I decided to come on. And this is the point that Beth Rigby makes.
Do you not think that if you got on there and talked about some of the Green Party's policies, and that it might be a way of communicating to perhaps people that wouldn't necessarily automatically look at I think I would.
Great question, eh? Why wouldn't you go on there, whether you like him or not, and take that opportunity? If they've got a load of right-wingers watching their programmes, you know, people who don't believe in climate change, in anthropogenic climate change, why don't you go on and say, well, I'll take them on? And this is so dangerous. This idea, it's come up in the last 5 to 6 years, this. And first of all, here on this programme, we were the first to see this. People trying to isolate you as a journalist, as a programme, as a place where discussion is open and free, try to I can't even say it. Just listen to what she says.
Lend them credibility, which they shouldn't have, as an outlet that is entirely about a biased point of view and vested interest. I think your interview just then was completely right. News is a really precious thing. It needs to have some sort of quality standards attached to it. Ofcom needs...
What a load of nonsense. The language I was trying to come up with was basically this whole idea by distancing ourselves from you, despite you have a legitimate platform, despite the fact you have a big audience, by saying we don't talk to people who talk to bigots or who talk to racists or misogynists, and we're also going to encourage other people not to come on your programme, this is one of the ways we can get rid of your programme. And it is pathetic. And my concern about this is that there is a generation, and I hope I'm wrong about it because it's been a long time since I've walked around a university campus, so I hope I'm wrong, but I think they are training the next generation of university graduates not to confront those with whom they disagree. And that is a terrible thing. I've said before on the programme, and I meant it, when I was at university and a controversial speaker was booked, or somebody we felt who might be conservative. Remember, I was an old trade unionist and old lefty, right? So if they were bringing in some conservative type speaker, I couldn't wait to go to have a pop at them. And I wouldn't be alone. I wouldn't have been alone. Lots of people would have felt like me. I think they're training a generation not to be like that. I think they're training a generation to believe that those who disagree with you are to be ostracised. They are to be shunned and they are to be ignored. Don't be seen with them. And that is madness, that. It is madness that a politician from the Green Party, which is an established political party, would say, I'm not going on GB News because they're very biased and they're very right wing. Jesus. I mean, if I felt like, or I couldn't wait to go on GB News, if I felt like Sean Berry, I'd be like, I'll give it to them. I'll give it to the bastards. I mean, I can't stand talk radio. I can't stand LBC, but I'd give my right testicle, I probably wouldn't, to get 15 minutes on there with Nick Ferrari or James O'Brien. I give anything. It's crazy, this. It really is crazy. And again, we saw it here on the Richie Allen Show first. We saw it here. Whereas 10 years ago, Zionists were happy to come on here and argue about the rights and wrongs of Israel and Zionism. These days, no, 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 stay away. Anything which criticises you or questions you or anything which sees the world very differently to you, avoid it like the plague, don't engage with it. So I've repeated myself 5 times there, but it's so serious. I can't imagine if we'd been lucky enough to have children, is that we'd ever encourage our children, you know, to not engage with people, to not listen to those they disagree with, and to debate them and stick it to them and say, here's a fact for you, what do you think about that? It's 23 minutes past the hour. And a whole generation like me, and people older than me, they're absolutely horrified by this development in society, you know. We're seeing it across campuses now in the UK where speakers are... I know the government has said here in the UK it wants to do something about it. It wants to prevent universities from giving in, from capitulating to the students' union when the students' union says, oh, we don't want J.K. Rowling or Graham Linehan coming because they're hate speech and we have to protect the students from hearing what they might say. Again, the change in mindset. If I was all in with the trans lobby, back in 1996, 1997, if I was all in with the trans lobby, I'd be rubbing me hands about the opportunity of having a go at Graham Linehan. I couldn't wait for it. I'd be wrong, of course. I'd be wrong. But still, I couldn't wait. I'll see that bigoted bastard. I'll give it to him when he's up on the dais. But nowadays, no. No, don't share a platform. Ban, shun, cancel, criticise, condemn. But don't ever give the condemned the opportunity to answer for themselves. It is nearly time for our first guest. Listen, before David Vance comes on, Dr. Tech Kong will be on the show a little bit later on. Looking forward to it. A lot of messages coming in already from people who've got something, things they'd like to say to him about died suddenly. died suddenly. Leave a message for the Richie Allen Show via my website, richieallen.co.uk. Leave a message via the app. And I've got to say this, and I am in the best of form. So please believe I'm in the best of form. There are people spamming the app. I'm going to ban you. I really am. I'm going to disable you so you won't be able to send messages in. I can do that. Stop spamming it. You know, send a few comments during a program. Stop sending 50, 60 comments into me during a program. Stop doing that. You know, I can hardly read them in a live two-hour radio show. So sparingly use the comments, please. If you've got something to say that's interesting, send it in to me, but not 50 every 10 minutes because it's a pain in the arse. Do you hear me? And you know who you are. 25 and a half minutes past the hour. Music now, and coming up after that, it's David Vance. We're going to talk about, among other things, we're going to talk about Joey Barton, former footballer. He's being sued by the broadcaster Jeremy Vine. We'll also talk Kate Middleton, and no doubt we'll talk about King's Cross train station and that Islamic verse from the Quran that appeared on one of the electronic boards. What's going on? What is going on? I've no idea. I thought this was England. My tongue is in my cheek now. I don't care what King's Cross puts up on its board. I mean, there are some Muslims in this country, just in case anybody's wondering, you know? This is music from Echo and the Bunnymen, The Killing Moon, The Richie Allen Show, 26 minutes past the hour of four. It's great to be with you then. Music from Echo and the Bunnymen, that's The Killing Moon on The Richie Allen Show. It's nearly half past the hour of 4 o'clock here in Salford City. Thanks for the messages coming in. You're fascinated by the Kate story. We'll ask David about that, no doubt about it. David Vance is a geopolitical analyst and broadcaster, and he's a good pal of the show. We get a quarterly, at least, kind of state of the nation breakdown from David. David, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
Hiya, Richie. It's absolutely brilliant to be back with you. Thanks for bringing me back.
You're a gentleman. Now, I know you went to the coast last weekend, and I have this theory. I know that at one time, and maybe you still are a unionist, but I think you're a closet paddy. I think you went to get away so that you could celebrate St. Paddy's Day. Out came the Guinness, out came the hat, out came the flag, and all the rest of it. Not a bit of it. You're at the coast, were you, over the weekend? All good?
I was, Richie. I've got a place on the north coast of Northern Ireland, and given the stress of life in general, I tend to go there pretty regularly to get away from it all, basically. So I stay in a very quiet little village. It's got one pub, so that's not too bad. It's got one shop, and frankly, that's enough for me.
Fantastic. You see, a village with one pub is a real problem for me, because I, not anymore, but I had a tendency to get barred from pubs. And if you're in a village with only a single pub, you're properly screwed, aren't you? So I suppose if there's only one pub, you're properly screwed. There's only one pub, you've got to behave. David Vance is our guest now. I'm fascinated. I'm davidvance.net, by the way. Follow David there. You'll find him on Twitter. What about this Joey Barton, Jeremy Vine? This is serious and not serious and serious. I know that sounds a bit silly, but it's an interesting one. Joey Barton recently, having kind of been quiet for a while, he's a former professional footballer and manager. And we used to see him from time to time on BBC Question Time. He's a fairly articulate bloke, I think. He began to criticise female football pundits. I think he's entitled to his opinion, whatever anybody else thinks about female football pundits. And then he got embroiled in a spat with Jeremy Vine. And just before I get your thoughts, and I'm really keen to hear what you think about it, I've got a read from the Daily Mail, which says this week that Barton has launched a fundraising campaign after BBC Radio 2 presenter Jeremy Vine took legal action following the former footballer labelling him a bike nonce on social media. Vine filed a defamation claim last week. Barton said that Vine's legal action could easily cost me up to £500,000. He alleges, as Barton, Vine's lawyers originally asked for 50 grand to be given to charity and all his costs before upping their demands to 250,000. I gather you think that Joey Barton really ought to have thought a bit harder about tweeting out what he tweeted out.
You know, Richie, I think that Joey Barton's heart is in the right place. I agree with a lot of the stuff that he says, actually, to be fair. But he seems, and he's not the only one, who seems incredibly naive to me about the consequences of social media and the consequences of entering a judicial system, which is not going to really find in our favour, I believe. That is, those of us who take, you know, particular, let's say, anti-statist views. So Joey, you know, listen, he says he's got deep pockets. He's going to need them, because I'm not a lawyer. I'm not giving an advice. But what I would say is that if you allege certain things of people, such as, say, Jeremy Vine, then you've got to be able to prove that, or else, you know, you're going to be in deep doo-doo. And that's exactly, I think, where he's heading. And I regret it. But I mean, he's not the first. He won't be the last person who seems to think we live in a country, Richie, where you can get, like, decent justice. You can't in most cases. Definitely not. Unless you're some kind of sycophant to the establishment. So I fear that Joey's going to have his pockets emptied. He didn't need to use the words that he used about Vine. Jeremy Vine, to be honest, I find him a pretty reprehensible character. I've learned over years, and maybe you'd agree with me in this, that sometimes the best thing is to keep your mouth shut. You can think it. You don't always have to say it on Twitter. You don't always have to say it. And I think that's Joey's mistake. And I'm sorry for that.
Yeah, I'm going to go along with that. I'm not a lawyer either, but as a journalist of 30 years and having worked in newsrooms, I've had to be across libel law, and I am across it. It is actionable. You can't go around calling people a nonce. You shouldn't do that. I would like to think that Jeremy Vine might have shown a bit of humility, and I'll say this because nobody all of a sudden believes that Jeremy Vine is a nonce just because Joey Barton said it on Twitter. Now, I said this at the time that Lawrence Fox was sued. I said the same thing. You know, nobody of right mind would believe that. Jeremy Vine is not a nonce. He's an idiot, maybe. You could argue that. I mean, we remember the carry-on of him on his radio and TV shows during 2020 and 21. But I would have liked to see some humility and Vine say, listen, I'm giving you one chance and one chance only. Shut the feck up, you know. And go ahead, David.
Yeah, no, look, that's an entirely fair point that you just make. But I mean, expecting someone like Jeremy Vine to show a degree of, sort of modesty about it. No, it's not going to happen. He'll have handed this straight to his lawyers. They're going to go bingo and off they go. And you know, so sometimes there is an old maxim that if you're in a hole, stop digging.
Yeah.
And I wish I knew Joey Barton well enough to be able to tell him that. Some of these other high profile people that have got themselves into big, big bother in the courts, I watch it from a distance, obviously. And I understand the frustration and their anger and all the rest of it. But honestly, I just wish I could get them and say, listen, guys, just let it be. Do you know what I mean? Listen to the words of what Paul McCartney wrote in 1969 or whatever it was. Let it be and walk away. Because it ain't well. I mean, lawfare is now something that's used in all kinds of ways and different perspectives. And I think Joey Barton has walked right into it. And I think there's another person suing him, a female football commentator whose name I happily can't remember. But, you can disagree with people in terms of how they do their job and you can criticize them for that. That's fine for me. Just then leave it be.
Yeah, it's any Aluko. I'll tell you the issue I have with Joey. Now, I've never met him. I did invite him on the Richie Allen Show a few weeks ago. I never expected he would come on, but I invited him on because I wanted to have a pop at him in the way that I have a pop at people, which is fairly jocular. And I don't, you know, you've known me for several years. I'm no Piers Morgan, grandstanding, shouty arsehole. I like to listen to the people I disagree with. I wanted to bring him on to say, why now? Is it about the podcast that you're promoting? Why all of a sudden are you throwing your hat into these, you know, rows and fights? Where were you in 2020? That might seem a bit churlish or a bit childish. But I would have also wanted to ask him, why go to the extremes you've gone to? There is a discussion to be had about positive discrimination, not just in football presentation, but in life in general. And there's no doubt that some women have been promoted to lofty positions within broadcasters that maybe shouldn't be there. But you're ignoring people like Jill Scott, you're ignoring people like Kelly Dalglish, like Gabby Logan, exceptional broadcasters. exceptional, and they're and I, you know, I'm no virtue signaler. They're there by rights, so there is nuance to this. And with people like Joey, you just get this, you know, shouty stuff that's designed to cause a big Twitter storm, and that's what I don't like, because there are those of us who are discussing these things in more nuanced ways, trying to get to the bottom of them, rather than saying things like "women are shit and they shouldn't be commenting on men's football," because that's just nonsense, right?
But you see, you're dead right. And those names that you just gave out there, they're all excellent commentators. They're female commentators, every one of them. And they actually enhance the sport if you listen to them. I enjoy them. So, yeah, I mean, look, I don't know why Joey is doing this. But all I know is that it's going to cost him. And that's the bottom line of this one.
Well, we'll leave that one there. You'll probably get him on. He'll probably come on with you. You can give him a bit of stick when he does come on.
I'll do it for you, Richie.
Do it for me, yeah. Put on the accent and everything. David Vance is our guest, davidvance.net. David is a geopolitical commentator and broadcaster. Do follow him, listen to him, listen to his guests. He gets excellent guests, great interviews. davidvance.net. What's going on? You made me laugh this morning, to be honest. I saw you on Twitter. You think there's a bit more to the Kate Middleton saga than maybe I do, which is good. I'm not sure that there's anything really serious going on here, apart from maybe they're being a bit childish and a bit, I don't know, maybe they're smarting a bit from certain media coverage and they're playing games, you know, kind of being in hiding. But you think there might be something going on, and you think there might be something wrong with the video published by The Sun today, given to The Sun by a man who says he filmed them at a farm shop. Go ahead.
Yeah, just play back what you said there. Yeah, a man handed it to The Sun. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because that's always the way it works. So listen, so on this one here, I can't believe that I've even been commentating on it, but I have, because what seemed to be a completely innocent, she went in for surgery, abdominal surgery, back in the middle of January, and then she was going to have a period of recovery. We never knew what the abdominal surgery was, though, to be fair. And she hasn't been spotted in January, February, or up until allegedly a couple of weeks ago in March. When, as you know, it's the sequence that gets me. So a paparazzi allegedly photographs her being driven by her mother through the grounds of Windsor estate. And she looks, Richie, the face is swollen. It's like someone on steroids, you know. It didn't look great, but then again, maybe that's what she needed. Who knows? But then the Mothering Sunday, the Photoshop, that just exploded.
Yeah,
absolutely exploded. And they sat back for a day, and then come the next day, she came out and she said, "Oh well, yeah. Oh, oops, I was doing a bit of photoshopping. There you go." And we all happy Mother's Day. And then you thought, well, that doesn't seem very professional. And then, yes, we get this video of someone. I mean, arguably, I look closer to Kate Middleton than the person in that that video. I mean, it's no way is that Kate Middleton. Just not, no way. Honest to God. And William with his baseball hat, so you can't get to see his face. So what is going on? Right. You asked the question. So I think that, you know, all I can do is revert to first principles. I don't believe we've seen Kate Middleton this year. Why is that? Well, because they don't want us to see Kate Middleton this year. Why is that? Well, that's when you start to go down the deeper rabbit holes in this one. Look, I have no insight into what's happening within the Waleses, you know, him and her. I don't have a lot of time for them, but, you know, I think it's very suspicious that we've gotten to this point in 2024. There's been several photographs and a video of people who are patently not her, or images from 2023. And I'm just thinking, well, what are you trying to cover up? Because it seems to get worse and worse and worse.
It is mad, isn't it? Didn't we learn also that a photograph was taken of the late Queen with her grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and it turned out that Kate took the photo and then edited this as well. So that's a bit bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, but here's the thing. You'll understand as well, Richie. Like, when these people, like the royals, they don't just take a pic on their iPhone and whack it out to the media. It doesn't work like that. It goes through their own press internal press department or whatever. You know, they have people that do these things for them. So I just found the notion of Kate sitting quietly in the background, photo editing away, to be pretty unlikely, actually, you know. But then it raises the other question. So as you said, that picture from 2020, the one with the Queen and all the grandkids, that was Photoshopped. So I'm beginning to think, and okay, I know I'm conspiratorial, but can we believe anything that comes out of either Clarence House or Kensington Palace? Can we believe anything? Because after the death of the Queen, it seems to be me that the British monarchy is on very rocky ground. And maybe that's a good thing, maybe it's not. But Charles and Camilla and William and Kate are not doing themselves any favours, I think, in how this is being managed.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
And final point in this one. I'll tell you, I took a great delight from this, Richie. On Easter Sunday, the mainstream media here in the UK, people like Sarah Vine and the Daily Mail, they were absolutely gloating when the photoshopped photo came out, and they were saying, take this, you conspiracy theorists, look at Kate, she's alive and well, everything's great, you small-minded miserable people. And yeah, then the next day Sarah Vine had to apologize.
This is right. I was wondering about it, having been around the block a lot of times myself in newsrooms and in radio stations. I was thinking, What might be going on? And then I began to wonder, if a young royal couple, if the outsider, so in this case the outsider would be Kate Middleton, if she decided that the life wasn't for her and the marriage wasn't for her, what would they do? And I began to convince myself they might do something like this. They might try and keep a lid on it for as long as they possibly could. You know, I mean, this will turn out to be nonsense now because I talk a lot of nonsense. But I thought to myself, I wonder if she's decided, listen, I'm not going to carry on in this life. It's no life for me or my children. They would do this, wouldn't they? They would put a lid on it, wouldn't they?
They would. And let's face it, she wouldn't be the first Princess of Wales to discover that once you're inside, it's not a great place. You want to get out. I mean, if I was Kate Middleton, I sure as hell wouldn't be taking any limo drives through Parisian tunnels.
But, not in the future, no. If she is leaving him.
You know, so look, I don't know. And as I said, it is idle speculation. We don't know what's going on. I've heard all the stories about, you know, problems in the marriage, all of that stuff. I don't know. Maybe they're very happy. I mean, I hope they are. But if they're not, I think, Richie, and this is maybe the more substantive point, when you enter an institution like the British monarchy at that level, I don't know how I don't think there is a way out. Like, I don't know that happy. Well, we saw what happened with Diana. So I just don't know. And the other thing is, history kind of, you know, the old cliche, history repeats itself. Well, we had Charles and Diana, and we know what happened, and we have William, and we have Kate. But that's not to say that there's anything nefarious. It's not. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying that all they need to do to prove people like you and me to be completely wrong and call our bluff is just put out a decent live video, and that's it.
Just come to the front door and wave at people and say, it's all okay, that's lads. It. Don't worry about it, you know. Yeah. I'll give you a laugh. Sorry, dear.
Yeah, and it's Richie, because they won't do that, that's where all the suspicion lies.
Yeah.
And they won't do it for some reason, but I don't know what that reason is. So it's probably a silly story season, early for 2024, though every day is clown world in 2024.
It
does fascinate me, I have to say. I've been guilty of doing podcasts on it and writing stuff about it because I just think, I can't believe their PR department is so bad. You know what I mean? I would sack whoever's in charge of royal PR.
In a heartbeat. Listen, I think it's a welcome distraction from some of the pretty awful stuff that we do cover day to day. So I've kind of enjoyed a bit of it today reading it. But I'll give you a laugh. About 11 years ago, I'm trying to do my sums in my head now. So I'm working in Talk Radio Europe in Marbella, and who hung around the station a lot was James Hewitt. Because he had a job for a restaurant in Banús, in Puerto Banús, where he was basically a greeter, and he would come around and talk to people at tables, and he was well paid for it, and he was being looked after, and he would come in, and I had an evening conspiracy show, and he liked it. He genuinely did like it. When he told me he liked it, I won't be bullshitted by anybody, David. So I said to him, stop bullshitting me, will you? I said, you've never listened to my radio show. And then he started telling me about the guests, and he was particularly taken with Jim Mars and people I would have interviewed over there. So I was amazed by this. So I said, come in. And he said, on the condition, he said, that you don't ask me about Harry. And I said, well, of course I'm going to ask you about Harry. He said, well, I can't do it then. And I said, well, what's the story there? And he said, well, he said, they've got it all wrong. The dates are all wrong. My relationship with Diana, I can't remember whether he said it was afterwards or before, but he said, I'm not Harry's kid. But I tell you what, David, every now and then one of those memes will appear of Harry in profile and Hewitt in profile, and I just start laughing out loud, you know? Because
Go on. I got, the genes don't lie. I mean, the imagery is, it's hard to deny it. I put it like this, but I mean, he may be right in what he said to you, but I don't know. I just think, as you say, this is one of these stories that's, I mean, it was in the Sun front page, Daily Mail front page, dominating news agenda. When, as you say, Richie, there's more important stuff going on, let's be honest, But sometimes it is also a nice wee distraction to get away from all the grim stuff in this world, and we can idly speculate about the Princess of Wales. So there you go.
Yeah, do you know, you hit the nail on the head. They could have the woman come out and speak to the press, or they could schedule an engagement for her on Tuesday of next week or Friday this week and say, right, you're going to open up this cake sale over in Cleethorpes. Get over there and do it. David Vance is our guest, davidvance.net. Follow David on Twitter too. So this is one now where I see meddling by the state trying to get a reaction out of people. So I see a lot of anger on Twitter today because on an electronic notice board, King's Cross train station in London, there was a verse from the Quran, and the reaction, I suppose, was to be expected. You have people screaming about it, you know, the Islamification of the UK, Sadiq Khan's London, and all of this. And I look at this and I wonder, is that what we might call, David, you and me, two Irish blokes, just good old shit stirring there by somebody to try and create a bit of a row out of nothing? Or do you think there's something else going on there?
I saw that. I did see that, and I did see the predictable outrage about it. And in a way, there should be outrage about it at one level, because I would have thought that the thing that they put up on notice boards at King's Cross or wherever is information about trains. I'm not going to these train stations, you know, to get a verse from the Quran or the Bible or whatever. I'm not interested. I'm there to get a train, and helpful information about the train would be a good thing. So when somebody sticks that up, I don't know what their motivation might be. It's certainly going to cause annoyance among some people. And, you could rightly say, well, it's happening all over, though, because with all the fasting going on during Ramadan, I mean, it's not just King's Cross notice board. I've seen it in fire stations. I've seen it in other parts of the public sector who seem to want to virtue signal their adherence to Ramadan. I don't understand why that should be. You know, I mean, I can respect, Richie, everybody's faith or lack of faith. Honestly, I really can. I don't get too annoyed about it unless it's shoved down my throat, and then I will get annoyed about it. And that applies to any faith, by the way. Don't tell me what to think. And so when I saw that, I thought, well, you know, okay, are the trains running so well? Is everything super duper on the rails that's the latest?
That's all they can do. Yeah.
Is that all they can do? You know, seriously.
What about the argument? What about the argument? I'm going to make the argument. There are nearly 3.9 Muslims in the UK, I think. 6.5% of the population. That's England and Wales only. So what about the idea that these are Muslims? Many of them are fourth, fifth generation. British Muslims. What's the harm? Ramadan is an important time of year for Muslims. It's a very holy time for them. And if somebody pops up a little message on a notice board, happy days, shouldn't we all just get on?
Yeah, no, I disagree. No, I agree with the first part of your question. No problem with that. Muslims should be allowed to live their lives as within the context of British law, obviously. They can do what they want. That's fine by me. But I just don't see the point of, I mean, there may be 6.9% or whatever the population. So, okay, does that mean 6.9% of train notices are going to be referencing Islam? I mean, that doesn't make sense, does it?
No.
Every train notification should be to do with trains. That's all I'm saying. But and it shouldn't have any reference to any any faith system or whatever you want to call it. I think that's wrong. Now, of course, actually, I could stir it more than you, because you're saying, yeah, like that's 6.9% across the England and Wales. But if you took it in London, Richie, it's a lot more than that, isn't it?
I think you're right. I think it is. Yeah.
So you could say, well, look, London is a pretty, you know, sizable Muslim population. So, you know, we need to communicate with them. But there again, I would question that by saying, well, yeah, OK, but not a train station, you know, not a train station. That's not the place to do it. And I do see the argument from those who say, you know, the people who get agitated about the Islamification and all of that there. We could be over sort of, you know, sort of analysing this. Someone puts up a little notice thing. It's a bit stupid. Doesn't really make any sense. Doesn't cause any harm potentially. And there are people who are perpetually offended. I get that as well. You know, I'm probably one of them. But you know, the perpetually offended are always going to be offended. But by the same token, you know, if someone put up a full on, you know, hard hitting biblical verse, I wonder, would the people who are calling for laissez faire when it comes to Islam, would they be so happy enough about that then if we whack up? I could think of some verses from the Bible that might cause a bit of a blowback if they were stuck up in the public domain. So, and I wouldn't approve of that, by the way, either. So I'm trying to be consistent.
No, you are consistent. I like your consistency. I'm equally consistent if I saw a passage from the New Testament or the Old Testament, even though I'm not a practicing Christian, a lapsed Catholic as I am, I wouldn't be remotely moved by it or annoyed by it. I'd be thinking, fair enough. And again, I'm no virtue signaler. I've plenty of flaws. There are plenty of things that do annoy me. By the way, you're right. 1.318 million Muslims in London. So 1,318,000. Yeah. And we know that Sadiq Khan is a bad egg. Can I ask you about something? I know that you've always been, now maybe I shouldn't put words in your mouth, and you can correct me, but I know that you've always had sympathy with the state of Israel, where I never have had, and that's fine. We agree to differ. We get on because we're mature and we're grown up. This redefining or rejigging of the definition of extremism, this is something to be concerned about, isn't it? Because I think even the most, you know, even the most ardent, you know, supporter of Israel, somebody, I'm not saying you are now at all, but even the most Zionist-minded person would have to acknowledge, I think anyway, again, I shouldn't put words in anybody's mouth, but that the great, great majority of people who have come out on the streets to protest against what's happening in Gaza are peaceful people. Of course, there's one or two complete dipsticks. You'll get them in any protest. We saw them in the anti-lockdown protests. But this is something to be concerned about, isn't it? Them redefining this definition of extremism and trying to give themselves the power, the remit, to point in any direction and say, we don't like you, and if we don't like you, you don't get to engage with the government. You know what that could lead to, David? If they do this, so if they said, right, David Vance, right-wing extremist, not that you'd ever be dealing with the government, but we won't deal with him and he doesn't get to engage with us. You see, the problem with that is that allows private businesses to take their lead from the government and go, oh, is that right? David Vance is a bad egg. Well, no more bank account for David Vance. You see?
Correct.
It's terrible, isn't it?
No. Yeah, no, you're right. No, I absolutely oppose this malignant new definition of extremism. I in principle oppose the government trying to restrict anything that people say. I honestly feel that, you know, we have existing laws, incitement laws and all that there, so we don't need this kind of nonsense being trotted out by this conservative government in its death throes. You know, we don't need this at all. And whilst, yes, you and I do disagree on, I think, some of the issues concerning Israel and whatnot, by the same token, Richie, I've got questions in Israel as well. So just to let you know, I'm far from waving the Israel flag. But like, I think that if people want to take the streets of London and protest peacefully, let them do it about whatever it is. I don't even care what the topic is they want to demonstrate about. That's the essence of democracy. And our problem is, and you've put your finger on it, I think the government's their real motive is to be able to get this definition levered in, and then Labour will I'm sure they'll run with it as well. And then they'll come after you and me and anybody else who dares jump outside the Overton window. All the stuff I want to talk about is outside of the Overton window. You know, I'm well aware of the fact that I'm not exactly, you know, I don't get a Christmas card from the government. This is more likely to get me some kind of summons ultimately, yeah. Because it could be Israel today. It could be, yeah, Ukraine tomorrow. It could be wherever it is. You know, it could be the result of the 24 US presidential election, whatever it is. If you say wrong stuff, they want to define you as extremist and they want to then punish you. Now, I absolutely oppose that. And I absolutely defend anyone who wants to say what they want to say. And I mean, as for, you know, the chant from the river to the sea and all that, because that's been kind of labeled as genocidal and whatnot. But I mean, you know, again, if people want to chant that, I mean, listen, I'm from Northern Ireland. I, over many years, have heard all kinds of chants, you know.
Yeah,
it didn't hurt me. Yeah. You know what I mean? I didn't collapse in a blubbering wreck because somebody was chanting something. And actually, mine, some of that might have been pretty genocidal as well. You just get on. If only we could be more mature and grow up, tell the government to leave us the hell alone. Don't try to control our speech. Let us say things. And as long as we don't break any existing reasonable laws, that's fine. But to bring in this extremism stuff in itself is an extremist act.
Can't add anything to that, mate. Good to have you back on. Really was today fascinating, especially that royal stuff. David Vance is a geopolitical commentator and broadcaster. He's on Twitter. If you look for David Vance, you'll find him. And it's davidvance.net. And of course, the links to where you can find David will be on the podcast notes. Always a pleasure, pal. Thanks for your time. I look forward
to
next time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, David. David Vance, live on Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. The time is a minute to the top of the hour. Thank you for your messages. Bradley said, Richie, your guest yesterday evening, Dr. Anne McCloskey, made the point that free speech is the freedom to offend and be offended. Is this Jeremy Vine, Joey Barton story not yet another example that proves this is no longer true? Yes and no, Bradley. You shouldn't be going public. If you've got a big profile like Joey Barton, if you're anybody, you shouldn't be calling anybody a nonce. You know, that it's about as serious an accusation you can make about anybody. Now, I think it's foolish for Jeremy Vine to claim, and I don't know what Jeremy Vine is claiming, but if he's claiming that his reputation was somehow tarnished by Joey Barton's stupid tweet, I wouldn't believe that. I mean, if I was the judge presiding over any hearing, I would tell the two of them to get the feck out of my courtroom, and I would tell Joey Barton, next time you call somebody a nonce and, you know, they're not a nonce, I'm going to find in favour of the plaintiff, I would say. So in this case, you know, don't go calling people pedophiles or nonces. It's foolish by Joey Barton, it really is. And it might very well, as David said, cost him an arm and a leg, a lot of money. On the Catherine or Kate Middleton thing, Roger says, they're trying to make people think she's dead. He says, Roger does, they did the same thing with Buffalo Bills football player Damar Hamlin here in the US. That's fascinating, Roger. I'm not familiar with that case. Andy in Aberdeen sure has been listening to the Papers podcast, and he mentions there is a book by Dr. Jason Fung, that is F-U-N-G, which talks about fasting. Thanks, Andy. I will look it up, pal. The British press was full of stories today about how fasting might make you more susceptible to cardiovascular disease. We've heard doctors on this programme, Ahmad Malik being one, who says he fasts, and it's been very beneficial to him. And I mentioned on the Papers podcast today, did I not, that Rishi Sunak himself, not that we're taking any medical advice from Rishi Sunak, but Sunak basically said recently that it is something he does. He fasts. Hi to Crystal. Australian news reported that on December 28th, an ambulance with a police escort flew out of Sandringham, where Middleton was staying, and drove off. No mention of it in the UK news. Colin says, Richie, meantime, Christian street preachers are arrested and frog marched off. Fair enough. Hi to Jonathan Stone. Hi, Jonathan. Richie, it's easy for the royals to put an end to the conjecture. William should tell everybody she's sick. Then when the friends insist on seeing her, pay the maid to dress up as Kate and wave them all to bed. Hey, it worked for Basil Fawlty, says Jonathan. I remember the episode well. Hilarious. He'd had a row with Sybil, hadn't he? Before the friends arrived for the weekend and she'd gone off to, I don't know where she'd gone, to her sister's or somewhere. And rather than just fess up that they'd had a big row, Basil, well, comic hilarity ensued. Chris says William and Kate have a house near Sandringham. Nobody local is saying that she's been seen around here, but a local rumour a couple of years ago was that, wait for it, William was having an affair with a local lord's wife. The lord himself reported to be gay, says Chris. You never know, Chris, you know. But if I had to have a fiver on it, and of course to have a fiver on it, you'd have to trust that ultimately you would be told the truth in the end. I reckon if my fiver is worth anything, I reckon they've separated, maybe. It's going to be something as banal, although that won't be too banal, will it?
Ask not what the BBG can do for you, but what you can do for the BBG. Support the Richie Allen Show now at richieallen.co.uk.
A Queen and good old-fashioned lover boy from Queen's Greatest Hits. I know it isn't from Queen's Greatest Hits, but my mind is gone today. I'm struggling to remember which Queen album featured good old-fashioned lover boy. It's not A Day at the Races, so it's not. It's not, is it? It's not. It's not. It's not. Okay, anyway, it doesn't matter. Listen, I've just had a message sent a few minutes ago from Dr. Tech Kong. He's running a little bit late. His wife had a hospital appointment earlier this afternoon and it took a bit longer than expected, so he's running a bit late. I hope he'll be on this hour. If he isn't, we'll rearrange. Things happen. That's okay. I'll keep an eye on the old messages there to see if he does get in and if we can get him on the programme. Number of you are really coming down heavy on the side of Joey Barton in the Jeremy Vine argument. And I reckon it's because of the conduct of Jeremy Vine during the COVID nonsense back in 2020. I mean, Vine was particularly odious, wasn't he? I'm pretty sure, reasonably quickly, I can drag out a clip. Vine was all about this. We shouldn't, in Christmas 2020, when they were just rolling out the jabs, Vine was all for a lockdown over the entirety of the Christmas. And he would say things along the lines of, wouldn't he? You know, have a great time now and then bury Granny over January or something. Let me play. I've dragged a clip out. Hang on.
What is the point of seeing Granny on Christmas Day if you end up burying her in the new year?
That's right.
I'm sorry for the bluntness of that thought. Vine at bbc.co.uk is the email. And enclose your phone number, please.
Yeah, that's still his email address, by the way, but I'm absolutely forbidding you from emailing him. Do not email him. Do you remember this nonsense?
What is the point of seeing Granny on Christmas Day if you end up burying her in the new year?
Yeah, it was him. That was him. Don't have a Christmas. You know, it could be Granny's last Christmas, you know. In many cases, you're talking about people in their mid to late 70s, 80s even. But yeah, confine Granny to the care home and don't have anything to do with her in case you kill her. At the time, nobody seemed to wonder what Granny might think about all of that, you know. We talked about this, didn't we, you and me, constantly. Is anybody asking Granny how she feels about it? Granny, we're not going to see you this Christmas at all to keep you safe. Granny might have said, listen, I'm 81 years of age. I've nearly just about reached the average life expectancy for British people. So fuck it, come and have a party. You know, what's the worst that can happen? So what if I die in January? We'll have had a good party. Bring plenty of gin, Granny might have said. So I understand why some of you are reluctant to see my point about Joey Barton. And I would have liked Joey Barton to come on the programme because I find him an interesting character. I've known about him for a long, long, long time as a football fan. You might remember years ago he went on Question Time, didn't he? A couple of times, the BBC Thursday evening panel show where they talk about the political stories of the day. So he's an interesting character, you know. Likes a fight, Joey. He's had a few fights over the years. He's a bit of a wide boy. But you can't go calling people a nonce, even as a joke. You can't do it, because if they come after you, you are in a very, well, you're in a bit of a pickle. And the pickle is this: either provide some proof or pay up. And he's crowdfunding now, Joey is. He's crowdfunding. And I don't want to see Joey Barton go bankrupt, no more than I want to see anybody go bankrupt. I don't favour Joey Barton over anybody else. I don't know him. But sometimes in life, you need a lesson, don't you? And that's a lesson he's going to remember for the rest of his life, if indeed he does have to pay a substantial sum of money to the broadcaster, Jeremy Vine. As I've already said, and I do mean it, if Vine was a man at all, you know, you'd think, all right, okay, Joey Barton might be a dipstick. I mean, that's what Jeremy Vine might think. But I'll be the bigger man, and I will withdraw my action with a warning. Do it again, pal, and I'm coming down on you like a ton of bricks. But maybe Jeremy Vine doesn't have the magnanimity to do that. It's coming up for 11 minutes past the hour of 5 o'clock. You're listening to the Richie Allen Show, Tuesday's edition. Dr. Tech Kong was due to speak with us, but he's running late. It's a tragedy of live radio. It happens sometimes. Okay, a number of your comments are coming in about the royal story. I told you, it fascinated me today that you're so wrapped up in it. You've got me wrapped up in it, wondering what the bloody hell is going on. It's going to be a very boring answer. When the truth eventually comes out, it'll be something banal. Maybe it won't be. Thank you for your messages. Wayne has been in touch. As soon as I reload the page, I'll read Wayne's comment. Everything has gone very slow on me all of a sudden. It's one of those days, isn't it? It's one of those days. Let me know your thoughts. You can reach me via the Richie Allen Show website, or you can use the app for the programme. The app can be downloaded via the Google Play thing and the App Store, Apple's App Store. Wayne says, in his opinion, I think it's likely planned for the royals to melt into the background as the globalism being unfolded needs everything to be broken down and rebuilt uniformly. Though I don't think it's possible to say if there is anything conspiratorial regards Kate Middleton not having been seen this year or not. And then he shares a video which I can't watch. It's interesting, the point about how there's no place for royal families in the Great Reset. That's a very interesting point made by Wayne, and he might very well be right. However, they're using the King of England or the King of the United Kingdom at the moment, or whether they're using him or whether he's putting his oar in, but he's all on board with the climate change agenda, isn't he? And he has gone much further, even as the Prince of Wales before he was crowned, before his coronation. He was certainly very much further ahead, not further ahead, but he was certainly saying and doing far more than had been said or done by anybody who came before him in the royal family. And this was much to the annoyance of certain politicians who said, I wonder what sort of king is he going to be? Kings are supposed to keep their opinions to themselves. Now, I think we might be able to join Dr. Tech Kong. So I'll take another tune and I'll dial him up, and then we'll have a chat with him in the time we have remaining. This is the Richie Allen Show, Tuesday's programme. Okay, well, we'll leave that there then, because happily, I can tell you that Dr. Tech Kong is on the line. Just before we say hello to him, your comments, your messages, please, to the website, to the app for the programme. It's coming up now to 14 and a half minutes past the hour. I'm looking forward to talking to my next guest. He's been a GP since 1982. Much more than that, though, he's been a senior police surgeon with Leicestershire Constabulary and a forensic physician for Northamptonshire Police. Would you believe he served on a number of committees and advisory panels in medicine and in politics? He was elected a board member of NHS Leicester City Clinical Commissioning Group. So his opinions, his thoughts on some of the things we discuss on this programme will be fascinating. These days, he is the party leader, the leader of the Alliance for Democracy and Freedom Party. It's a real pleasure to welcome to the programme Dr. Tech Kong. Hello, Dr. Kong. Lovely to have you on the programme. How are you today?
Hello, Richie. I'm fine, thank you. Thanks very much for the invitation.
It's a real pleasure to have you on. There's so much to get into. We've got, I think, till the top of the hour today. LBC Radio, LBC News, ran a number of stories today about what they call sudden death events, where a young person or a sports person has collapsed and has died on the field or during training. And this is something which is becoming more and more common, according to some people. Now, an old friend of mine, Tech, said to me, look, Richie, these things are becoming more prevalent in the media because more and more people are looking for them. It wasn't unheard of for young people to have heart issues going back, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. And it's only because there's such scrutiny now on this whole area that it is being reported so often and so widely. I'm not sure about that. What do you think? Is there reason to be concerned about the seeming growth in such events where young people are taken ill suddenly and die? What say you?
Well, all deaths are sad events. And I think deaths in young people, especially when they're unexpected, is almost catastrophic news for people nearest and dearest to them. I think on a macro scale, on a national scale, when there is a surge of deaths in young people, we have to ask basic questions. And, you know, there are a lot of more illustrious people than me looking at these things. And there is convincing evidence from a collation of various data sources that there is a correlation between the announcement of the pandemic, and especially coincidental with the rollout of the mRNA vaccines. Now, I'm not implying that there is a causation because I'm not in a position to confirm that, but I can tell you that in my short time before I retired dealing with the ill effects of vaccination, COVID vaccination, that I was in a horrible position one day when I had to deal with a 15-year-old previously healthy boy developing chest pain and shortness of breath on his regular football training. Now, that boy, to all intents and purposes, was about to be discharged with musculoskeletal chest pain because my colleagues thought there was nothing particularly wrong with it. They couldn't find anything wrong. I mean, I wouldn't blame anybody for dismissing the case as probably musculoskeletal because, you know, his oxygen was all right, his x-ray was all right, his ECG was fine. And the proviso was given that should things become worse, to return to hospital. Now, it so happened that the ACP, the advanced care practitioner, asked me to have a look at a case. And I said, look, if you are particularly concerned, do troponin and a couple of other tests, you see. And we weren't expecting great things, but I had my suspicions. And lo and behold, 40 minutes later, it came back 10 times above normal. So that was my first encounter of myocarditis in a young 15-year-old previously healthy boy. Now, you could speculate, if he had played football a couple of days later or whatever, he could be one of those sudden deaths on the field. So we've got to be cognizant of the fact that these things are happening, and it behoves the government to stop the rollout. Never mind talk about we'll look at this, we'll look at that. Every delay is a potential death. Every delay is a potential harm caused.
Can you answer me this, Doctor? How is it that, and I'm not here to kiss your backside, but it's got to be said. No, it's got to be said, you've held some very senior and very respectable positions in medicine. So how is it, can you explain to me then, how the government can ignore people like you? Because it isn't just you, it's other very senior doctors who've practiced medicine with distinction for years. In fact, I would go as far as to say it's dozens, if not hundreds of doctors. How can the government ignore this? Why would they not want to say, yes, there's something very wrong here, let's at least suspend the rollout while we investigate it? Why do you think they're, you know, ignoring people like you and others?
I think that's a question most pertinent for the government to answer themselves. But I can tell you, back in November 2020, when I first encountered what I thought were causally related events, I asked for a national debate. It was ignored. I asked for a moratorium. It was ignored. I even asked the chairman of the CCG board, which I had left, to look at certain things, and I was dismissed. Now, there were colleagues, you're quite right, there are colleagues of mine who dare question or who dare propose alternative management schemes for COVID. They were suspended, they were censured. And I've never come across in my entire working life that discussion on scientific grounds was to be oppressed, suppressed.
You never saw anything like it. So some of your friends and colleagues, they were saying things like, we've got this medicine that is used to treat, it's an antiparasitic, but we know it's got very good antiviral property. So they were saying ivermectin, they were saying hydroxychloroquine. And you were absolutely stunned by what happened to these doctors just for offering a qualified medical opinion.
Absolutely right, Richie. I tell you what it is as well. In my earlier years, I was a research registrar in rheumatology in a prestigious centre in Glasgow, Rheumatic Centre. And, you know, one of the things I was taught very early on is in any phase three clinical studies, you have a baseline of a patient. You then, first of all, you select your patients according to the trial criteria. And if they meet the criteria, they are offered the clinical trial. So there's freedom to enter a trial. In this particular situation, there is no freedom to enter. There was even coercive measures. And we even had the infamous no jab, no job by Sajid Javid. Right. So in a clinical phase three study, what happens is if the patient consent or if the person consents to take part in the trial, you would monitor, you would have a baseline record of various vital signs and various biological parameters, hematology, biochemistry, you know, renal function, that sort of thing. And then in the progress of the trial, you monitor these parameters over and over again to pick up any changes. None of these were followed. These are all things in pharmacovigilance, in the care of patients, in bioethics. They are contained under the Declaration of Helsinki. None of these things were observed. And what happened was, you know, when a patient takes part in a trial, what you do is you say, look, you can take part or you can decline. If you decline and you've exposed to the condition, we have ways of treating it. And here is the data. Here's the data of adverse events. Here's the data of benefits. It's up to the patient to decide. None of these things were offered. And then towards the end, you code break to see who's taken the real thing, the dummy, and so on. There is no follow-up at all. In fact, if you develop any events, you're dismissed. I mean, I had to encourage my patients who had suspicious events to fill in the yellow card. A lot of them didn't bother. They said, oh, it may go away, doc. Now, there's also the problem of long-term sequelae. So what we see in people that you mentioned at the beginning, you know, dropping dead, dying suddenly, now those are probably the intermediate things. There are people who die very quickly. I mean, there are celebrities like Lisa Shaw, the BBC news presenter. She had thrombosis of a cerebral circulation. Coroner certified that, and it was incriminated. The vaccine was incriminated. But, you know, if we lose one life, we should sit up and listen. In any normal circumstances, when there are deaths, when there are serious adverse events related to a new product, we halt the trial.
Can I ask you to confirm what you said to me a moment ago? Dr. Tech Kong is our guest. This is really important stuff. Anybody who might be thinking about continuing with the COVID vaccine jabs and the boosters, you need to listen to this, right? I'm not telling you to believe what Dr. Kong is saying. I'm saying listen to what he's telling you. This is important. Now, you said to me that what the government effectively did in 2020 was it attempted to place the entire nation in a phase three clinical trial. That's what they did effectively. They said, right, here you go. Here's this jab. You've got to take it to protect yourselves and protect others. That was effectively placing them in a trial. And then the government abandoned the usual protocols following phase three, which is to carefully monitor how the recipient, how they get on, how their, you know, their next weeks and months develop, to look for any signs that there might be any problems with the jabs. But they just didn't do that. That's exactly what has happened, really, since 2020. Is that right? The whole of us, not me, because I didn't have the jab, but everybody who did were unwittingly taking part in a trial. Didn't the former president of the United States, Barack Obama, say this? Didn't he basically let the cat out of the bag and say that effectively this is a global trial of a drug, effectively? That's what's happened.
I don't have a problem with global trials. I participated in trials that were managed globally, but the ethical measures were not put in place. The screening of patients for suitability to enter the trial, the offer of alternatives, the informed consent process, the monitoring, the pharmacovigilance afterwards, none of those things were followed up. It can't be right, can it?
No, no. And it's interesting you mentioned that some people opted not to fill in the yellow card report. And that's interesting to me because I read somewhere in one of the broadsheet newspapers that is it 1 in 10 or just under 1 in 10 who will actually file a report to talk about their injury? And if that's true, well, then the scale of injuries might be unimaginable. I mean, it's fair to say that, isn't it?
Well, it's difficult to make a judgment on that because there are people sending in spurious reports. There are people who underreport. So it's a very, very mixed picture. But all I would say is there is a tendency for people, because it's from the government, it's a trusted source, they think, well, no, it probably will pass off. So there are minor effects. Do you know, there are problems going down the line we don't know about. So if you postulate the effect of spikes incorporating themselves into certain tissues, then it might create a situation where the body's own defense system doesn't recognize it as its own and start attacking it. So that's the basis of an autoimmune condition. Now, autoimmune conditions, people in nursing circles or people who are well-read will tell you that it can take years to develop. So we don't know what we're doing. We know what potentially can happen. We're probably sitting on a time bomb of some very nasty conditions.
And were you, I can imagine you, you're listening to Dr. Tek Kong now. Tek is the leader of the Alliance for Democracy and Freedom Party. There will be links on the podcast notes after the live radio show. The time is coming up for just around 28 and a half minutes after five. This is really important. When you think back to March, April, May 2020, I'm a layman. I have no training in medicine. I know nothing about medicine. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, whatever that is, right? I'm a journalist. I've been a journalist for nearly 30 years. Once we got into April, May 2020, it was apparent to me that there really wasn't a pandemic, at least not in Salford, in Greater Manchester. I didn't believe it. And partly because a couple of whistleblowers from Salford Royal Hospital were telling me that the wards were basically empty or operating at just under capacity, even after they had removed beds to enable social distancing. How did you feel in mid 2020, Doctor? Did you think that the country was in the grip of a pandemic? How did you see things?
Well, I think most observant people, never mind medics like me, were seeing anomalies in the policies. I mean, here is a virus that, you know, if you were in a restaurant having a meal, as soon as you got up to go to the gents, you have to put a mask on. And yeah, the virus only attacks people standing up. I was in a queue and the lady in front of my wife said, oh, 2 meters. So I thought, really, I couldn't hold back. I said, look, sorry, we forgot to bring a measuring tape with us. It's a virus that jumps only 1.9 meters, not 2 meters. And there were such anomalies, you know, people wear these shields, you know, they breathe air, but the shield would protect the virus somehow. And, you know, when you go to the supermarket, there were these Perspect glasses between cashier tills. There were such stupid anomalies. And a mask. I mean, with due respect, I told this to a friend I know well. I said, if you can smell somebody's effluent, you can most certainly sniff a virus.
Can we stay with this just for a second? I hate to interrupt your flow now. But as a senior police surgeon, as a man who would have worn a mask in a clinical setting, what's the real truth about masks? I still have people who get in touch with me and they say that masks do prevent some transmission spread. What's your final thoughts on masks? Like, you've looked at it all over the last 4 years. Can they do anything to prevent the spread of transmission of anything?
To be honest, I would say if at best they would probably reduce something. But, you know, if we're in a grip of a pandemic, if the viral load is so high, I don't think anything can prevent you from receiving the viral load. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
So to give people the false illusion of the security of a mask is flawed. You're far better than saying, if you get these symptoms. I mean, the whole thing was a total debacle. If you want to save people and safeguard people, you say, look, at the merest hint of something not right, get in touch with the GP. But you can't get in touch with the GP. They're all shut.
Yeah. They were, weren't they, shut? Well, you couldn't get an appointment.
The system is failing. Now, you got these excess deaths. How many of the excess deaths are due, are due to the vaccine? And how many deaths are due to the inaccessibility of health services? We don't really know, but we need to know these answers. We live in an open democracy. We should have the answers.
Which has the government...
I cannot forgive a government that actually puts pressure on people when we're in a free society, put pressure on people to take something that's experimental, fast-tracked onto the scene under emergency use authorization. That is not right. And even if you did, you should have the conscience to monitor for safety. So what they've done is totally unconscionable.
They pushed it when they had no idea about long-term issues, and then they abandoned everybody who did take it, is your complaint. And as you said, I mean, we saw the MP Andrew Bridgen in a very professional and almost gentlemanly way try to raise this in the House of Commons, only to be booed and heckled and ridiculed by people around him. Not just his own party, but by the benches opposite, the Labour Party and the Lib Dems. It seems there's a conspiracy of silence around this, isn't there?
Unfortunately so. You know, I know Andrew Bridgen. I mean, we were fellow finalists in the selection for the North West Leicestershire seat, and I'm delighted that he was selected over me. Now, Andrew and I have been in contact from time to time. He's done a sterling job. He's done a sterling job to alert the people. It's up to the people to decide on the balance of probability, on the balance of facts, whether they should take it or not, and whether they're likely to get problems. So I'm not here to suggest to people take or do not take, but what I would say is this: the government has responsibility. You know, we ordinary citizens think the government looks after us, from taxation to healthcare to education. We are of that impression. We're of that generation that trusts. I think our trust has been abused, very badly abused, okay?
Let me just jump on something there. It's my fault. I should have mentioned earlier. Dr. Tech Kong just mentioned that he stood for the Conservative Party. I should have mentioned in the introduction, Dr. Kong has previously stood for the Conservative Party and for the Brexit Party. Is that right? Am I right in saying that? The Brexit Party?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Historically, I was never interested in politics. I was determined to look after people. I work in one of the 10 poorest wards in the country. But one of my patients, who was the chairperson of the Conservative group of the Leicestershire County Council, the late Anna Pullen, she saw how I was fretting, saying this policy isn't working. Whenever she came, she used to ask me how's medicine, and say, bloody awful. And she would say, look, you really need to get out from behind your desk. If you really want to care for the health of the nation, you can't just doctor people from behind your desk. You only have access to about 10,000 patients. So I said, no, Anna, I just want to concentrate on medicine. But under influence, eventually I relented. I said, look, show me the way. And she introduced me to the Conservative Party. It didn't really matter to me which party it was. I was focused on getting the health policies right. So there we are.
No, I totally understand that. Yeah, I get it. You thought that there's an opportunity to influence policy, the direction of policy making from within, yes, rather than from without. I totally understand that. Dr. Tek Kong is our guest. So a number of our listeners we're live, as you know, and they're sending us messages left, right and centre on this. And one of the big concerns is the truth about excess mortality. Because, yes, because you know yourself, the internet can be a cesspool. So there are people who are very angry about the last 3 or 4 years, and sometimes they can descend into exaggerating or using misinformation. Everybody is guilty of it, right? Not yes, not any specific group.
No.
Are we operating in this country at far and above, over the 5 year period, excess mortality in terms of what we would expect? Are more people dying from all causes than we would ordinarily expect to die, as far as you understand it?
You know, I don't have access to the statistics as far as being a statistician.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I'm not trying to put you on the spot at all.
Let me explain. You see, at the beginning of the pandemic, there was very powerful encouragement for us to certify death as a COVID death on the merest of criteria. All right? So there was a ballooning of COVID deaths. Now, so the COVID deaths eventually subsided when people said, oh, I'm not sure, when things were challenged. And then we have the next wave, COVID vaccine-related deaths. Now, this is a very contentious area. Unless, you know, those people who die, everybody who dies was opened up, everybody who was vaccinated was autopsied to find out what the cause is, against the people who never had the vaccine. Unless we did that, I think it's very difficult to know. But, you know, there are various methods of probing for an answer. Now, the government should encourage and have transparency over this and settle this issue once and for all. But until we do that, there is nothing wrong. If we now know as much as the vaccine isn't 100% effective, 100% efficacious, and the disease is only troublesome to the most ill people in society, why don't we have a moratorium? And then look at the situation. And if the government is exonerated, go ahead with it, relaunch the program. But we should be doing all those things, plus all the flaws I mentioned. And, you know, one of the things which worried me tremendously is, if this thing was rushed onto the public scene with no indemnity from the manufacturer, why should the government pick up the tabs for compensation?
Yes.
Because ultimately, so if I go for the jab and I get a problem, it's taxpayers' money. My money paying for myself. It's bonkers. It doesn't stand to reason at all.
I'd love that to be investigated more thoroughly. Why would any government give indemnity to a pharmaceutical company in such a time? It is absolutely beyond me. I've been in this business for a long time, and I can't get my head around that. Why would you give them indemnity? It's crazy to me. Dr. Tek Kong is our guest. It's coming up for 21 minutes to the top of the hour. We've got another 10, 12 minutes with the doctor. His credentials are impeccable. Now, I'm not blowing smoke up his backside by saying that. I'm telling you, his credentials are impeccable. I'm making the point that he is among a number of a large number of very senior, very qualified men and women who have demanded the government say enough for the time being. Let's suspend the programme. Have a look at it. Am I right in saying, Doctor, that back in the 1970s in the United States of America and in the last part of the last decade, swine flu rollouts were suspended pretty quickly when there appeared to be some injuries? So it would have been a common enough thing in the past for a programme to be halted while they checked to make sure that it was safe. Is that right?
Well, that is so. But why are the same standards not
being applied
now?
Today? That's the point.
It is a big mystery to me, Richie.
Yeah, and that's my point. Why? And again, I go back to one of the first questions I asked you. How can they get away with ignoring people like you? You see, it's one thing to ignore some guy who does an independent radio show. I have no qualifications in medicine. It's pretty easy and it's quite appropriate to ignore me because I can't be dispensing medical advice. But you can. And Malhotra and McCullough and everybody else and the doctors in this country, the GPs I've had on, you know, because they are continuing to administer these shots to people as we speak. You know, people will get more boosters tomorrow, maybe not so much in the spring. And they could be playing Russian roulette with their lives.
Absolutely right. So that's unconscionable.
It must drive you around the bend. I mean, a guy like you, it must drive you around the bend. How do you cope with that knowledge, knowing what you know?
I'm angry. I'm very sad. I'm very angry. And there's so many other things that spin off from this. There are, I mean, we know the health system is degraded beyond all recognition. So, you know, I remember at the start of 2020, I was able to see patients. There was no appointment needed in the morning. And then in the afternoon, we booked appointments. And then things changed very quickly. Things aren't returned to normal. You go into some surgeries, the chairs are still placed at social distance. And you go up to the receptionist and say, put on a mask.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you leave the building, you can pull the mask off. It's totally madness.
Do you know, I was at my local surgery last week. I'm a very healthy guy, but I do have asthma. So I use salbutamol occasionally.
Yeah.
So they asked me to come in for a review. And they said, if you don't come in, you won't get your prescription. This silly behaviour. So I said, OK. I went in anyway. And there was a lovely nurse. She was lovely. I have to say that. But she was masked up. And I asked her, I said, why are you wearing a mask? And she said, it's better to be safe than sorry. And I said, safe from what? I said to her. And she said, well, there's still a bit of COVID around and there's a bit of flu around. And I'm, you know, anything for an easy life. So I didn't pursue the conversation. I just answered her questions and then I left. So you're right to say they're still carrying on. In our local parks around here, the signage, doctor, is still in place. You know, COVID-19, keep your distance. All this stuff is still around. They never took it down. It's still there. And it must be having some impact on people. What do you think?
I certainly think it controls people's ability to think and analyze things properly. Before you round off the conversation, the reason why I'm standing in politics is I'm not just a COVID-minded doctor. I'm particularly concerned that, as I mentioned at the beginning, our health system is being degraded. We pay a lot in taxes. Well, those of us who have actually paid taxes, we pay a lot in taxes. The majority are very law-abiding people trusting the government. But, you know, today going round leafleting the district, the number of people came out and said, we can't stand this NHS anymore. We can't get an appointment. You know, there are dilatory tactics being employed. There are procrastination. And then if you get to see somebody, you may not see a properly qualified doctor. You probably see it's not the person I'm saying criticizing because they could be very good. But you end up seeing physician associates.
Yes.
And they have now this program to rush through medical doctor apprenticeships. Now, I don't want my health, critical elements of my health looked after by somebody who's an apprentice. Do you see what I mean? You take the best of school leavers. Traditionally, you take the best of school leavers, you train them, you develop the clinical acumen, and then when they qualify, you bombard them with guidelines and protocols. You emasculate the intellect. It doesn't work like that. You know, you should encourage the growth of intellect, the growth of patient advocacy. You want the doctor to be your advocate, to fight for your health, to retain you on this earth for as long as they can, not to try and bump you off. Jeepers.
I was going to say to you anyway, because as the time was winding up, I was going to say to you, look, if you wanted to come back before the elections if he wanted to come back on to talk about the NHS, not to talk about COVID injuries.
That, yes.
I'd like you to do that so we can schedule an hour and we can get into it, because it's very important, your perspective, because you've worked in it for years and years and you've seen the changes. And they are terrible changes. They're drastic changes.
They are. I can tell you, I'm humble enough to say that in the 40 years I've practiced medicine, no politician has got it right. And every politician has got it worse and worse. So
why, doctor? Why?
Stepping up to the plate.
Why have they gotten it worse?
I'm stepping up to the plate to make sure that NHS stays alive and gets better.
So this is a key issue now for the Alliance for Democracy and Freedom Party. And you're listening to the leader of the party, Dr. Tech Kong. And I will, of course, put the links to your party on the podcast notes. And we get a lot of podcast downloads, so a lot of people will see that. But why? Why has it gotten progressively worse? I know it's a question that might take you 2 hours to answer, but they've thrown billions of pounds at the National Health Service over the years. So if somebody is listening to this now and they roll their eyes and they say, oh, come on, Dr. Kong, what do you mean it's getting worse? They've given it billions over the years. Why has it gotten so bad? If you can answer that in 3 minutes.
3 minutes, right. The billions are wasted. When Conservative left government, it was 37 billion spent. When Labour left, it was about 130 billion spent. Now, it's way above 200 billion or more even. We spend money like it's growing on trees and you shake and it just drops. You know, we had all these Nightingale hospitals with all these PPEs, where we had all these track and trace. How much have they spent
Billions.
On things that have no consequence? And yeah. in fact, by having blockades to people getting the services, we have failed our patients. And for my colleagues to think that, you know, pay is the only condition. No, pay is not the only condition. The working conditions, the oppressiveness, we must get rid of those things. We must let professionalism flourish and the patient be the centre of our attention, not the government. Okay?
There's something called
the tripartite compact. It's totally bent and corrupted.
Yeah, I've heard this before. So it is the case then that managers and administrators, they're not speaking to doctors who are actually meeting patients face to face. They're not saying to doctors, listen, how can we make it better for the patient and for you to treat the patient? They're not consulting doctors, are they?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
We have also, I mean, we're loads of wastages. I mean, we have equality managers,
yeah.
Teams of them. I mean, even for example, I remember when I was on the board, we had cigarette cessation officers, and there were 40 of them for one half of Leicester City.
That's crazy.
Look, stopping a fag, you only need one officer. You don't need 40 officers. Just look at the wages.
Last week, I reported on this programme.
I gave the information to a Mail on Sunday reporter, Martin Delgado, years ago. I said, this can't be right when, you know, the administration just threw money left, right and centre. It's not helping patient services.
Pouring it down a black hole. You know, the Sunday Times, or it might have been the Sunday Telegraph, they ran a story. The NHS recently appointed a team of people on a combined salary of £3 million a year to try and determine the impact of medicines on the environment before they prescribe these medicines. It's the most bizarre and ludicrous thing I've read for years. They basically said to these guys, we want you to examine everything we do and look at the carbon footprint of it and the impact it's having environmentally, rather than on whether these products are necessary for patients. It's incredible. £3 million for a team to sit around twiddling their thumbs on something that is absolutely preposterous.
Oh.
Preposterous.
The worst things I tell you, Rishi, the worst things that happen. Crazy.
I'd love to get into this with you again on a future show before the election, when we have a bit more time. I'd appreciate it. It was great to get your perspective today. I will, as I promised, you're very well known anyway, but I'll put the information on the podcast notes. Dr. Tech Kong is the leader of the Alliance for Democracy and Freedom Party. You'll find him on Twitter. I'll put links to the Twitter page as well. Do give him a follow. Is the glass half full or half empty? Just before you say goodbye, are you still optimistic that we can turn this around?
Well, I can't judge that, but I'm sincerely hoping my presence in the constituency my free ability to talk to people and discuss things with them. I hope people will realize my sincerity. I'm not a career politician. I'm a doctor. At the end of my working life, seeing all that's gone wrong, I'm here determined to save the people's lives in a political way, and also hopefully in some small measure, at least save our nation.
Wouldn't it be amazing if you got in there as a doctor with your experience and you were able to ask?
I'll be most humble.
Wouldn't it be amazing to ask about suspending, putting a moratorium on the rollout? Because anybody with a brain can see that's one of the first things that needs to happen. Tex, thanks so much for your time today. I appreciate it. I look forward to next time. And good luck with everything you're doing with the party. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Well, some of my colleagues would like a recording of that, if it's possible at all.
Of course it is. Yeah, it'll be on iTunes. It'll be on Spotify real soon. I'll send you the MP3 over email and then you can do what you like with it.
Thank you very much, Rishi. It's been a pleasure. I hope I've acquitted myself well for your show.
Oh, you've done more than that, Doctor. Thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it. And we'll speak again soon. Bye for now. Dr. Tex Cong, live on Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. Tex is the leader of the Alliance for Democracy and Freedom Party. And as I said, links to where you can find the party and Tex himself will be on the notes after the live show in a few minutes' time. I appreciate that. Right. Thanks for your messages. On the Jeremy Vine and the saga with Joey Barton, Brian came on to say, didn't Vine have an issue with Alex Belfield and didn't Belfield go to prison? That's right. Belfield was convicted of stalking Jeremy Vine, as far as I remember. Thank you. On the William and Kate thing, Nelly says, only recently William missed an engagement due to personal circumstances. What's going on? Let me scroll up. Hi to Colin, who says, remember Jeremy Vine's video from his sick bed selling the booster shots? What a pillock, says Colin. That's a word I haven't heard in a long time, pillock. I love that. It's been a while. It's been a while. Good evening to Elizabeth. Hello, Elizabeth. Good evening to Jan, who says, David is right, love her or loathe her. Katie Hopkins, for example, says, Jan was financially destroyed by the courts after one tweet, says Jan. But what tweet was that, Jan? I'd like to see that now before I agree with you on that. You know, you can't go accusing people of something they didn't do publicly. You just can't do that. Libel laws are important laws. Defamation laws are important. You know, in theory anyway. Hi to Fred, who said, I had two friends sued for libel. Barton needs to make a reasonable offer. So then if Vine turns it down, Vine might not be awarded costs. Either way, Barton has got to pay Vine or the lawyers a lot of money. A lot of interest, as I said earlier, in this story. Hi to Johnny Boy, who says, Richie, the Muslim message on board okay, but did they display Christian messages at Easter or Christmas? I don't know, says Johnny. Maybe somebody does. Good question, Johnny. I don't know. I made the point. It wouldn't bother me in the slightest whether it's a Hebrew message about Hanukkah, whether it's a Christian message about Christmas or a message about Islam. I just don't care because there are more important things to be annoyed about, in my opinion. Good evening to Zach, who says, surely if Will and Kate were at a market in public with several security guards, there would be more than one person that would have taken photographs. That's a good point. It's a very good question. I don't know. Hi to Vicky, who says, regarding Islam in the UK, David Curtin from the Heritage Party posted an interesting video on YouTube today. Two-tier society. Councils ban British flags and church bells while permitting and expanding the Muslim call to prayer. I don't agree with that, Vicky. I don't mean I don't agree with you. I do not agree with councils favouring one group of people over another. If that is true, it's preposterous. I don't like it at all. It was a night at the opera, good old-fashioned lover boy. Thank you, Tim, for this. Ardell came on to say, Richie, apart from the vaccine's experimental status, why was the medical establishment not questioning the obvious anomaly of relative risk reduction versus absolute risk reduction? Again, that is a very good question. I do not know. I do know. I'm not naive. I know. It's an agenda. But it's so obvious these jabs have caused widespread harm. And it is so obvious now that there are hundreds of learned men and women, qualified men and women, establishment people like Dr. Tech Kong. And I'm not insulting him by calling him an establishment person at all. He is, by their own yardstick. He's one of theirs. You know, a gifted surgeon and GP. And he's one of hundreds who said, listen, stop the bloody jabs. Stop them. They're causing chaos in people's lives, killing people. And yet no sign of any moratorium. No sign of it. Hi, Beryl. How are you? Richie, I took the COVID signs down in my park. I cut them up and promptly threw them in the bin. Well done, Beryl. Fantastic. You know what, Beryl? I'm going to take a leaf out of your book. Where I see these signs in my local park, I'm going to do my best to take them down. Some of them are big steel signage, but I'm going to do my best to get rid of them. Good point. And we'll see what happens. Kate says, my doctor made an appointment to see the doctor, to see him or her at the surgery, and it was a paramedic who assessed me, says Kate. Hi to Paula. Richie, we know why the health service has gotten so bad. They are intentionally ruining all of our systems so they can say the former ways didn't work, then we need to build back better. New world order, here we come, says Paula. Thank you, Paula. And hi to Rob in Birmingham, who says, great guest. I really enjoyed listening to Dr. Tech Kong. That's great. Thank you, Rob. That's it for the programme. Big shout out to David Vance, davidvance.net. And thanks again to Dr. Tech Kong, retired these days, the leader of the Alliance for Democracy and Freedom Party. I've been Richie Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll see you tomorrow. The Papers podcast, bright and early, and the Richie Allen Show tomorrow at 4 o'clock UK time. I'm going out with a classic bit of 1990s. It's the Dalai Lama song. I crack myself up. I don't crack anybody else up. Hasta mañana, slán tomal. Bye now.